Welcome to Blondie and the Brit, Writing, Publishing, and Beyond. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com. Welcome to Blondie and the Brit podcast. I am Blondie, KJ Waters.
And I'm Suzanne Cowman, I'm the Brit.
And together we're Blondie and the Brit.
Yay!
Woohoo! I am the author of Stealing Time.
And I'm the author of The Rejected Writer's Book Club.
Welcome to the best of Blondie and the Brit.
I'm so excited on Blondie and the Brit today because I get to interview a friend and a hero of mine, Andrea Hirst. She has had 25 years experience in the publishing industry and is a skilled literary agent. She has worked with major and regional publishing houses. Her client list includes emerging new voices, not unlike myself, and New York Times best-selling authors. Andrea represents high-profile adult non-fiction and well-crafted fiction. Her clients and the books have appeared on The Oprah Show, Ellen DeGeneres Show, Good Morning America, National Geographic Network, and in The New York Times. Wow. Congratulations on all that. Welcome to the show, Andrea.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So it's exciting for me because this is actually my agent. I was so lucked out to find Andrea. And we'll talk a little bit about that during this interview, I'm sure. But that's why I'm excited to be able to interview her today.
Yes. Well, hello, Andrea. This is KJ. Glad you're here.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask, I don't have an agent. Why does somebody want an agent? Someone like myself, I'm an indie author. And then we're going to do this format a little bit differently. I'm going to ask you this question, and then I'm going to ask Suzanne the same question. So it'll be interesting to see the two different sides of that.
Well, you can be an unpublished author, or you can already be a self-published indie author. So it's kind of a different reason for both. For an unpublished author, they're going to have a lot better leverage getting into a publisher, getting their manuscripts read if they have an agent. For an indie published author, if their sales are good or if their book is noticed, like in Suzanne's case, having somebody that can do the negotiating, that understands the business, that can be even the bad guy sometimes, so that the author can just be the author, is extremely important. For instance, even usually an agent can get you a higher advance and a higher percentage and a better contract, so they pretty much pay for themselves, and you've got someone on your team that cares about your future career as well.
Right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And so, Suzanne, tell us your side of this. You've recently gotten Andrea as your agent.
Andrea and I have known each other for a couple of years, and I'd always hoped that one day maybe she would be my agent. But at any rate, I wanted to say, as we started to get into negotiations, there were so many things that I just didn't realize that an agent did, things that need to be negotiated through the contract. And when I got this contract, I mean, I hadn't got a clue a lot of the language, whereas Andrea would go in and, you know, highlight things and let me know what things were. And I just realized this would be hard, really hard, if you didn't have that expertise behind you. So for me, from the minute that she became my agent, which was, you know, pretty quickly in the process, I felt really safe. It was like I could send her emails or ask her opinion, and a newly published author or for an indie author, which is what I was. So I was pleasantly surprised by the experience.
Well, that's great to hear. The more we talk about this, it really sounds like they can do a lot for you, and it isn't like you're adding an additional cost. With an expertise in the industry, it really adds a huge value.
Exactly.
Now, Andrea, what is the best way for someone to approach an agent?
So an agent in general, I'll talk to agents as a whole rather than just for me, because my standards are a little different now. But an agent as a whole, the best way is if you can get them in person. Many agents travel to conferences, they go to pitch fests, they give classes. If you can get them FaceTime, if you can get them listening and actually requesting your project and something they might remember, that's the best way. The second best is to send a query letter following the exact instructions on their website. It's a little harder because we get so many, but that would be the second best way.
Right.
And make sure you research which ones you pitch.
Right. Now, there's certain genres that they cover or types of books or something like that?
Yeah, I'm always really surprised that someone will take the time to do an email pitch and not have gone to my website. Because on my website, there's not only clear instructions, but it'll say, we represent this type of nonfiction, we represent this kind of fiction, And it clearly says what we don't represent. And yet we still get queries for that, which go right into the trash.
Yeah, and it's a waste of the author's time, too. Why would they bother? Suzanne, so tell us how you approached Andrea.
Well, the great thing is that we live in the same area, and I actually knew of Andrea a long time before we actually did connect. And the first time I actually met her was about 4 years ago. I was at a conference, and I was pitching a different book to a different agent, and Andrea and this agent knew each other. And I remember that I was sat pitching to this agent at the time, who was pretty excited. And I was sat pitching to her, and I remember Rita turned around, and she said to Andrea, "Andrea, I've got blah, 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 blah. What do you think?" And Andrea gave her this great advice at that point, and I thought, wow, who's Andrea? You know, but this New York agent, she turned to Andrea and asked Andrea's opinion. And then somebody said to me, "Oh, Andrea, she's local." But I remember thinking, well, there's somebody that's close, that's local, that obviously is very knowledgeable. And I kind of made that mental note. But I have a very special story, and I actually mentioned this in the book that I wrote, the indie book that's being republished by Lake Union Publishing, is that I was at the point, and you know the story because I've told you this, KJ, where I'd rewritten this book. And it got to the point where I said, you know what? I'm done with this book. I want to throw it away. And then I thought, why don't you send it out to somebody in the industry who you really respect, because they will give you a really honest evaluation. And my hope was that Andrew was going to write back and say, you know, this is a load of rubbish, throw it away. I go, thank goodness, I can let it go. You know?
That was your hope.
Because you get to that point, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember sending her a query, and if she would read it, and also, you know, I wanted her to help me out with some development editing if she was up for that. And that's what she did. And she came back and she was just all glowing. You know, this is a great book. You need to move ahead with this. And it's really funny. And it was this validation that I needed from somebody that wasn't a friend, that wasn't a family member. Because Andrea's known for no nonsense. You know, she wants to be honest with you because she doesn't want you to waste your time.
Right.
It was actually her encouragement that made me pursue pushing through and getting that done. So I was so grateful to her at that time. And then it's only good that later we become, you know, she becomes my agent. It just makes sense.
Right. And Suzanne, you chose her as your agent after you've got the offer from Lakeland Publishing, right? That was the kind of the initiator?
Yeah, well, the funny thing was, do you remember when KJ and I were on the phone and I got this offer to my email box, and it was Andrea that I contacted because we'd got this relationship that we'd built. And she was the one that said, call me right away, you know? So I knew it was something, it was a good thing, because I was ready to put that in the trash too. So, you know, thank goodness for Andrea, because not only did she save the book, she saved me throwing away the offer as well, you know?
Wow. So she is your hero. That makes a lot of sense.
She is my hero.
Yay, Andrea.
Well, I couldn't believe she was going to put that in the trash. It probably wouldn't have been the first author to do it, because it's another thing, you know, as an agent, I know what's happening. I know who's who and what is spam and what is not. And that was definitely not spam.
Yeah.
So,
no, it's a great book. I think part of Suzanne's issue with it was that it's comedy. And once you've read through it so many different times, it's no longer funny. So is that part of it?
Well, that was exactly the problem.
Yeah. Andrea, Susan and I were talking about this. When you have an agent, are they representing you as a author in a career, or are you representing a certain piece of work, or does it work both ways?
It works both ways, but generally we sign one book or a series at a time. So the contract will be for that. And it's, you know, if we work well together, and we're making money, and then the author writes the next book, and then the hope is, you know, to continue. But if the book doesn't do well, and there is nowhere else I can take them, then, you know, the agents only get paid if the book sells. And I think a lot of people don't really understand that they think that, you know, all this work we do behind the scenes for someday getting paid is worth it, and to them it's worth it.
Yeah.
But with an agent, really, it has to be about what can I sell, and will my time be compensated? Because it's always risk.
Right, and that's why you're careful about who you choose. You don't want to invest your time and effort into someone who won't pay off.
Exactly.
Right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Can you tell us what agents are looking for in a submission?
Most agents, if you're going through a query letter, for instance, they're going to want to know where your book fits, what genre, what are some comparable titles that show audience, they're going to want to know the hook. If it's a novel, you know, a little short piece of the plot,
right.
Just enough to get their interests. If it's nonfiction, you know, who's going to buy this book? How's it going to help them? They want to know your platform, who you are as an author. Michael Larson, a big agent in San Francisco, uses the three words, the hook, the book, and the cook. And I think that's perfect.
That's
Could
good.
You explain what that means?
Yeah.
The hook, the book, and the cook?
Well, the hook is something like, you know, if it's, let's say it's nonfiction, for instance, and they've got a cure for headaches. The hook is, this is a brand new cure for headaches, and millions of people in the U.S. alone have headaches. The book is, what makes it different is we focus on blah, blah, blah. But then when the cook is, well, who are you to write this? If you say, well, I had headaches for years and I no longer do, that's not going to impress a publisher. But if you're a doctor who has researched this with thousands of clients and you have a big clinic and you have this great website and this great blog, then you have it all. And that's when they're going to want to request it, because it's something that they possibly could sell to a book publisher. But once they get it, then it has to read well, and it has to fulfill the promise of the query letter.
Really interesting. Are there certain things that people should do and not do when they're approaching an agent?
Well, there's a lot.
I'm sure.
So, if they're approaching an agent through a query letter, the very first thing is to go to the agent's website and read, start with, who are they? What do they represent? Do you fit? Are they open to submissions? And if so, exactly what do they want? Do they want you to paste a certain number of pages? Do they want you to just send the query? Follow instructions, because many times if you don't, you're not even going to get read.
Right. And that's an easy thing to do. Just go to the website, research who you're approaching. Does it fit? If it doesn't, don't waste their time. Don't waste your own time.
Also, make sure your query letter is well written and well edited, because that's your calling card.
Mm.
And if you can't even write the query letter and there's misspellings and, you know, it's awkward, then right away, why should we read the book?
Yeah, that's a good point.
What about in person, Andrew? What's a good way? I mean, are there certain etiquette when approaching an agent? You know, I remember at the conferences, they were frightened to go to the toilet in case someone had, you know, accosted them in the bathroom. So are there certain things that we need to follow as protocol if we're approaching somebody in person?
Yes. Actually, in one of the classes I teach, we do practice elevator pitches for just that kind of thing, where there's a short. Generally, at a conference, you will have anywhere from 3 to 10 minutes at the most where you're sitting in front of an agent. And then for that piece, you want to be really well prepared. Again, this hook, book, and cook, you want to get that out clearly and cleanly and quickly. For it, what's hard is somebody sitting in front of me, and I don't know whether the book's even nonfiction or fiction, because they haven't even told me up front what it is. But let's say that you couldn't get an appointment with the person you wanted, and you see them walking down the hall. The best thing is to, you know, be polite, go up and say, do you have a minute? Can I tell you about my book? And be considerate. You know, if they're standing in line in the bathroom, don't do it.
But give them a moment of privacy.
Most conferences, you have a chance to sit with an agent at a meal. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, not stalking in a crazy way. But, oh, there's so-and-so I was hoping to talk to, and no one's sitting next to them at lunch. I think I'll go sit there. I mean, that's very strategic, and it makes sense. And the reason we're there is to find a book that we want to sell. We hope to sign that we can sell.
Right.
So it's absolutely fine, but always ask first.
Manners first. Treat people with respect. That's basic good advice for any business situation. Can you tell us kind of the timeline of Suzanne's book release and the process it's going through? I think it's really interesting for us indie authors that we kind of do all this stuff ourselves. Suzanne has already written the book. It's already been published as an indie author, and now it's been picked up. What steps do you start right from that point? Things that you've already done and things you're about to do?
Well, all books go through the same process, whether they've been out or not been out, pretty mm-hmm. much. And so once a book is sold to a publisher, they're assigned a developmental editor. And that's a really key piece. And that's one of the things that indie writers sometimes skip, often skip.
Yeah.
I will ask, did you have the book developmentally edited? Oh, no. My critique group looked at it, or my friends, or, and you know, that's fine. That works sometimes. But a developmental editor will look very carefully at the structure of the story. Let's say it's a novel like Suzanne. It's everything from plot to pacing to characters to dialogue. Does it have a sagging middle? Yeah. Do you hold our interest in the beginning? Is the end satisfying? There's no way a writer can do a final polish without a really good set of eyes on the book. And that's the first step. Sometimes the developmental edit will include some line edits as well, rewrites. Personally, I think it's best not to do too many and not to step on the author's toes or their voice, particularly if they have a publishing contract. That's what sold the book.
Yeah.
But sometimes there's some polish. Then it will go to a copy edit. Grammar, punctuation, spelling, you know, overused words, formatting. And then often after that, there's a last set of eyes, a proofread. And so while all of that is going on, the marketing team is in action. They're putting together, we just got an email yesterday with one-liners and product description and author bio to polish up. The cover is being redesigned in this case. The salespeople are being notified. Everything is being put into place for production if there's interior design or whatever, formatting. And so it's pretty much the same process building toward the launch date.
And for Suzanne, the launch date is in the spring, right?
Right.
Right. And so, okay, so then what happens once they produce the book, they've got it out there? What are the marketing steps that go through that help the book get into distribution channels and out there for sales?
Well, it really depends who the publisher is. If we're talking about Suzanne's book, she's going through Lake Union, which is one of the major imprints of the Amazon publishing arm. And it's just like a Random House, only Amazon's division is Lake Union for her, which is the women's fiction.
Right.
And they primarily will focus on the ebook, although they do the paperback as well. And there will be, the book will go to distributors and it'll go to some bookstores. Amazon is obviously the huge strength in the ebook market.
Yeah.
So promotions, price promotions, features, mailings, all of that will be going on. What goes on behind the curtain at Amazon and marketing is pretty amazing.
Right. Well, it's a good place for Suzanne to be.
So kind of switching just gears just a little bit here, Andrew. So I want to talk a little about you. And I know that you've got lots of great things going on. Particularly, I know that you decided to become a self-published author yourself. Could you tell us a little bit about that journey and what the decision was and how that's been going for you?
It was quite a decision, actually, to come from a traditional publishing background from so many years and being a literary agent. When I finished my first novel, I mean, the first learning curve was, here I'd been representing fiction, teaching fiction, working with fiction for many years, but actually writing fiction was a whole new experience. And I realized that my knowledge of the craft from the inside out had to be strengthened. So that was the first step. And when I finished it, I had that same thing as you. I was ready to throw that first book away. I thought, it goes in the drawer, right? It doesn't go to the public. But at the same time, I thought, my agent brain was going, I don't think this book will sell to a publisher. It's a cozy beach read. Those types of books right now are not being signed unless there's a big name attached, like Debbie Maycomber or some of the others in the same area, the comps as me. So I thought about it. It's got a bed and breakfast in it, and Nora Roberts and Debbie Maycomber had both just released bed and breakfast series. I thought, I really don't think this will fly with an agent, and I wasn't going to agent myself. So I did talk to a couple other agent friends, and pretty much that was the thought. So then it was, well, self-publishing is so hot right now, and I edit separately outside the agency. I do developmental editing for private clients who are self-publishing and consulting. Maybe this would be a great way for me to really learn self-publishing, learn the marketing aspect, the production. Plus, I'll put my book out, and if 10 people like it, I will be thrilled, and then I'll move on.
Right, and it's a low-risk proposition. You're not investing a lot.
Well, except I was putting my name on it.
Well, that's true, yeah.
Putting my name on it is not, as an agent, and I teach for an MFA program, It was like, what will people think of my little commercial novel here? And so I had to get through that, which was another learning process. And then, oh my, once you put that publisher hat on, I had worked at publishers. I knew what I was doing, but it's still a different route. Self-publishing, you have to do everything from the interior design to finding the right cover designer to writing the product description, the keywords, the uploading. So then it was finding good people I could count on to help. At the same time, I was lucky enough to meet Melissa Foster to help me understand how to be successful with the marketing as an independent author.
Right.
Because I was going to brand the book. I had already bought the domain name, the first book, the guest book. I bought the domain name, Madrona Island Trilogy. And she said, no, scrap all of that and build your name. You're the brand. You're the author. That was one of the biggest things I've learned, and I'm so glad I learned it early. But then there was all the creating, my author platform, my Facebook, my Twitter, all of these things. Putting that book together and then releasing it and then marketing. Continue, what are book promotions? How do I do blog tours? I've learned so much. I feel like an expert in indie publishing, and miraculously, the guest book became a bestseller.
Get out. That's great. Woo! What an exciting story, though, to start. Like, you're completely on the other end of this with all this expertise, but to have to relearn so much of it just to be an indie author. You think a lot of that would just come easily to you, but it's a completely different thing, isn't it?
Well, like the cover, for instance, I was used to traditional printing, not print on demand. So when we would order a cover, when I worked for a publisher, we'd get our proofs and it would look like that when the books came in the boxes, not with print on demand. I had a little border on my guest book cover originally. Don't ever do that. Yeah. And the border would move with each printing.
Oh, no. Yikes.
So with the color.
The guest book is the guest book on water.
Right. The cover was a blue. Blue is very hard in printing to get. Sometimes the book looked a little more purple than it did blue.
Oh my gosh, that's so weird. I didn't realize that that would shift.
I didn't either. I called them up screaming and they said, oh yes, an eighth of an inch is always a variable. Colors will vary.
Oh my gosh.
This was a whole new experience for me.
Yeah, it's not the same as the traditional publishers that have a very fixed process.
I did end up redoing the covers when I released the second book, and I'm much happier with that. And that was another thing I learned. Actually, I would say one of the biggest lessons I learned is it's worth the money to do it right the first time than to have to keep going back and fixing it.
So can you tell us a little bit about how you became a best-selling author?
I get asked that all the time. And I can tell you that I can't 100% tell you what it is. I can tell you what I did. But when I analyze it, I think one of the biggest components is I wrote a book that fit very clearly in a very popular genre where there's a lot of readers. And I think that's very important to create a bestseller, particularly on your own, without the support of a publisher behind you. You do need to fit somewhere, like in a popular genre, women's fiction, sci-fi fantasy, mystery, thriller. If you can fit there where you know there's an established audience, it's much easier to reach the audience. The other thing I did is when I first released Guestbook, KDP, I went with Amazon exclusive. I went with their Kindle Direct publishing where I could get the promotions and be able to run a free promotion or a Kindle countdown every 3 months. And I leveraged that. And I ended up hiring a part-time marketing person eventually to help as well. So my first 6-9 months on Guestbook, I did give away about 100,000 free ebooks.
Wow.
And some people say, well, I kind of cannibalized some of my audience, but I have over 1,000 reviews on Amazon.
Wow, that's amazing.
I think, that part of that came out of the free promotions.
Wow. And Amazon, could you explain a little bit about the Kindle Countdown? Because we were talking to somebody else about this, and I would love to know more about it. How does that work?
So when you are KDP, which is Kindle Direct Publishing Select. You are eligible every 3 months to either do a free promotion or what's called the Kindle Countdown. With the Kindle Countdown, you discount your book. You can discount it, say it, and you can raise it. I usually do the countdown for 5 to 7 days. I think it's 7. I leave it as long as they'll let you because it's extra promotion. So it becomes more visible. Amazon puts it more visible because it's on a countdown. So every day they might say 3 more days, you can still get the book for 99 cents. At the same time, normally when you have a book that's at below a certain price, I think it's $2.99 now, you only get 33% or something. But when you're on the countdown, you still get 50% royalties, even at 99 cents. So they're doing extra promotion. You're getting a little bit more money at 99 cents. And then I get behind it with other paid ads and promote it. Hey, this book is on sale for 99 cents, 3 more days. And so it's extra visibility. Price promotions really help get sales and reviews. And some of the reviews are good and some are not, yeah. but it's visibility.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Getting out there. That is cool. And KDP, you're select, you're not with any other ebook provider. So you're only on Amazon. Is that true?
Only on Amazon. And I tested this out by trying the book on other areas as well and taking them in and out of KDP. And I am back with KDP. For now, I just don't. The advantage is so much more helpful to me than having. But I have heard other authors with a lot more books and maybe much bigger sales say that they're doing better having it more diverse. But for me, my readers and my buyers are mostly going there. I tried another major one, and it was such a small percentage, it wasn't worth losing the ability to do the promotions through KDP.
Right. Well, and they're giving you a lot of their marketing support, too, by promoting the book. That's a huge thing for an indie author.
Right.
And I've actually heard he'd only got one book, that you should just stay with KDP, that obviously once you get more books, it's okay to diversify, but for exactly the reason that you've said, Andrea.
Well, I'm still on KDP, so that's still my choice. And I have 3 books out now, and when I put the 3rd book out in the series next year, I'm pretty sure I'll still be on KDP. For now, that's what's working for me. You really do have to see where your audience is.
Andrea, I wanted to ask you about your story. The first book, can you give our listeners just a little synopsis?
Several years ago, I was sitting with a friend at a little bed and breakfast on Whidbey Island before I lived here. And whenever I would like come out of the kitchen or come in from a walk, she would be sitting there reading the guest book at the end. And I said, what is so interesting? And she said, I love the peek into other people's lives and how much they've enjoyed the stay here. And that was the moment I thought, oh my, that is such a good idea for a book. I have to write that. I had no idea what the rest of the book would be about, but I knew that a guest book would play a prominent part. And so then I started putting the pieces together, and it's basically about a woman of 30 years old living in Southern California in a bad marriage who finally chooses to see if she can follow her passion and find love too. She leaves the marriage and she moves to the fictitious Madrona Island where she's inherited a bed and breakfast that used to belong to her grandmother. And then all the challenges she faces on the island and all the friends she makes, and it's this cozy, beautiful place filled with wonderful food and friends, and eventually how she finds her strengths and puts the past behind her.
Ah, that sounds great.
Okay, Jay, that Andrea's detail is incredible. You, by the time you're finished with the book, you're so hungry. Because every time she describes food, you want to go eat whatever she's talking about. But I was so glad she put recipes in the back, and I'm like, I'm so glad because like page 55, I wanted to make this.
Oh, that's so cool. What a good idea. You don't want to read this book and be on a diet, though, it sounds like.
Oh, no, don't read it on a diet.
Good for your summer vacation, then. That's awesome.
And what about the other 2 books? Do you want to just give us a quick synopsis of those as well, in case people are interested in picking up the series, Andrea?
Well, the series, book one is the guest book. Book two is Tea and Comfort. And it features, there are 3 main women in book one, but each woman is featured predominantly their story in the following 2 books. And it's about her past. She was a model in New York and kind of ran away to the island and opened this tea shop and ran away from an engagement. And what she was hiding and how she overcomes her fear, and always there's a happy ending, of course.
Good!
Third book in the series, which will be out next year, is called Island Time Cafe, and it's about the woman Jude. She just turned 40. She owns this local cafe in town that everyone hangs out and they love her, and she has this hot chef that she's hired that she's falling for. And a movie is coming to town to be filmed there, and with it, some of the secrets of their past.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's great.
Now, they're connected, the characters. It sounds like there's a different main character, but is it still like the same town in the same kind of...
Absolutely. They're all three friends in the same town. One owns the bed and breakfast, one owns the tea shop, one owns the cafe. They become really solid friends in book one. And then their lives continue to intertwine through the three books. But the backstory of the other two women come out in the other two books as well.
Now, that's a great way to do a series.
That sounds so interesting, the way that you put that together.
And they're all doing well on Amazon KDP. That's really good to know.
Yeah, where can we get them, Andrea? Just so if people are listening, we'll put links up as well.
Amazon, that's where they are. And there's paperbacks too. The covers, I think, are absolutely beautiful. I had them completely redesigned. And again, I ended up spending quite a bit more money, but boy, it's sure worth it.
Yeah, we often discuss on this show about the importance of a cover, how important the cover is, you know?
It's very important. It's the first thing they see. And even with promotions, like there's many sites, Kindle Books and Tips and BookBub and all of these. The first thing you see, a reader, is the cover before I even register the title of the book.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. And the mood you create with it and the feeling and also what you're conveying is the professionalism that hopefully conveys to the text that's in there. You know, if you've got a sad cover, you automatically assume that the writing is not good and that it's a poor quality storyline. So there's so much that comes with that cover.
It's really true. If I see a really bad cover, I have very little hope for the quality of the inside.
Yeah, and you're not going to lay down some money. Even if it's 99 cents, you're not going to bother. There's plenty of other choices.
You know, really, writers would take the time to learn and polish the craft of writing before they try to go into the business of publishing. You know, just because you finish a book doesn't necessarily mean it's ready for the business. And I see that a lot. It's that they publish too soon, because they're in a hurry, or they think it's good enough, or their friends liked it. Book publishing's a business, and when you're going to put a product out there, you want it to be the best it can be.
That is really good advice.
So, Andrea, tell us a little bit about some of the editing services that you offer.
As a literary agent, last year, I pretty much closed the door to new clients. I stopped taking query letters, and I only strategically signed new clients based on referral predominantly. So, the reason I did that is partly because the world of publishing agenting has changed so much, but on a completely separate side of the business, we have been working as developmental editors, and I work for many publishers, refer me manuscripts to polish for publication, as well as independent authors, because if you don't have a strong book, you're unlikely they're going to get this, especially if they're looking for an agent. It's almost impossible. So I offer developmental editing and publishing consulting. But again, I do not offer that to clients I represent, nor do they cross over. It is a completely separate business.
This is how we connected work-wise first, was I had her do that development edit for me, and it was great. It was a great edit.
Good.
And one of the things I offer is a service called The First 50, where I edit your query letter, your synopsis, and the first 50 pages of the book, because that's where the decision is made. And most people are very surprised how much more work they have to do before they can even get their foot in the door.
Ah, that's a good service. It's like
that is a great service.
Yeah, tip of the iceberg. Like, it's exactly what people decide if they're going to buy the book as well.
For indie writers, you know, you have the preview on Amazon, where a potential buyer can get a free preview and make a decision. And also, if they're on Kindle Unlimited, it depends on how many pages they read, how much you get paid. So the better the entry, the more they're going to keep reading.
Yes, that's a good point. Yeah, people that buy the book and then don't finish reading it, it's calculated in terms of how much they get paid. That's a really good point as well.
Yeah.
So you may have sold them the book, but if they never crack it open or if they're bored after the first two pages or whatever, it impacts your bottom line.
That's right.
Well, good. That's very intriguing. I might have to have a little chat with you about that as well for mine. Okay, so are we ready for the lightning round?
I'm ready.
All right, tea or coffee?
Coffee.
And for writing, do you prefer silence or music?
Silence.
What did you want to be growing up?
Teacher.
A teacher. Well, in a way, you're teaching now, right?
Yeah, I love to teach.
Oh, that's cool. Is there a book that you could read every year?
Movies come to mind.
The Rejected Writers Book Club. You already have to read that every year.
I can't. Nothing comes to mind. I watch A Walk in the Clouds, the movie, every year.
Aww.
So I'll answer that.
Okay, that's fair enough. Dog or cat?
It's a tough one. If I had to pick one, it would be dog.
And what's the cutest dog, by the way?
What kind of dog do you have?
I have a dachshund.
Aww,
he's the sweetest boy ever. He really is.
What author would you most like to have dinner with, either living or not?
Madeline L'Engle.
Oh, nice. What is your favorite vacation spot?
Well, I like Hawaii a lot.
Good choice. What is your favorite book genre to read?
Women's fiction.
Oh, I like Suzanne's book and the one that you wrote. Do you write best in the morning or night?
The afternoon.
So oh, she's just going to go right in the middle of that. That's good. If money was no object, where would you live?
I would have more than one home.
Right.
I would keep one in the Pacific Northwest, but I would have somewhere sunnier, south, somewhere near the water.
That sounds good. But a generic place, apparently haven't found it yet.
Well, Monterey Carmel, if I were a billionaire, would be nice.
I love that area. I got engaged.
We're going to be billionaires soon, Andrea. Just hang in there.
All right, Monterey, I'll start looking.
Oh, you start looking.
Sounds good.
Start looking, and I'll move in next door.
Okay.
And I'm coming to visit both y'all.
All right.
What is your favorite comfort food?
Chocolate.
Oh, nice.
Me too.
Do you have a nickname?
Nope.
Nope. Suzanne, this is your job. You're going to have to give her one.
Hero's her nickname.
Aw, that's cute.
Aw.
Beach or mountains?
Beach.
Yay, I'm with you there. All right, that's it. Those are our questions. Thank you for playing along.
That was fun.
Yeah. Get a little more info on you. Well, we really appreciate you coming with us today. It has been a great interview. I'm very interested to listen back to this. You have so many good tips.
So I have a blog called Authornomics.
Oh.
That you can get on our website, theandreahirst.com. And we interview industry professionals. My one of the editors I work with, Sean Fletcher, also does a column with a lot of tips for editing, marketing, book writing. And so we have usually a couple posts a month that could be helpful for authors as well.
Excellent. Yeah, well, everyone go check that out.
It's also on Publishers Marketplace. Yeah. We also have a newsletter that goes out every couple months with some information. The next newsletter is coming out with some recipes, too. So.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
Awesome. Well, that sounds great. Well, we do appreciate you coming along with us. It's been a great interview, and best of luck.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Please join us next week where we welcome back Melody Robinette for a Best of Blondie and the Brit episode with a young and very interesting fantasy author. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com.